Clayton, three people sleeping in my bed. All right, all right. Hey, welcome, everyone. This is Studio W, The Buzz, your global radio network. We circle this thing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with the finest in broadcasting anywhere around the globe. So, hey, welcome back. By popular demand, today we've got a special broadcast. That is Dr. Charlotta Barringer Brown, and we're going to be asking a few questions. This is her first, second visit here. And I am William A. Brown. I'm the host, along with my co-host, Dr. Patricia Aldridge. Good evening.
Good evening.
Come on closer to your mic now. We want to hear you. Got to hear everything you got to say here. So we had such a blast, Dr. Brown, last time, that we're going to have you back again and again before the election. And I'm telling all my friends about it. I was even telling people outside the state that can't even vote for you.
Okay.
Because I was so impressed with your focus and also some ideas that you have about maybe improving our school system here. Now, you're running for the Dale District. Is that correct?
That is correct. I'm running for Dale District School Board in Chesterfield County, Virginia.
Okay, and the election will take place when, November?
November the 7th.
November the 7th. So we got plenty of time to get the word out. And hopefully you've shared this with some of your sorrows.
Oh, yes. I have spoken with Chesterfield alumni and others in the field and have had opportunity to be out in the field and talk to many people. So I'm hopeful to get the word out through name recognition and understanding what my platform is. I don't even say platform. I say Charlotta's perspective.
Okay.
What my perspective is about this particular campaign and the needs that are things that are desperately needed in our schools currently.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. You know, it sounds like if you haven't written one already, it sounds like you're on the way to writing a book.
You know, I don't know about that.
Okay.
I'm thinking about different things and how to put that out there to the public, but you know, never really thought about it in that way.
Okay, all right. Well, just think about it. I mean, it might happen. It might happen because I think your approach to, and like I said, I was so impressed with our last interview that I said, yep, we have to have you back. And so I'm going to ask a few questions. I'm sure Dr. Aldridge has some as well. Being in the education system for so long, you have some questions, I'm sure, that I may not have thought of. But what I like to say, there are some, let's say there might be, for the lack of a better word, a few issues that may be going on, not only in the Dale District, but probably in school districts around the country.
Yes.
I would like to know, what are some of the issues that you think that need to be addressed? And also, maybe some changes that you would make, and how would you change some of the things that you would like to implement? I mean, how would that come about?
Certainly. Well, what I'm going to say is that everyone is talking about learning losses. The learning losses occurred in various communities, meaning black and brown and all students, before COVID, due to the SOLs being lowered or decreasing of the rates. Before COVID, and COVID has just seemed to exacerbate that. But one thing that I have truly picked up and noticed is attendance rates. Mm-hmm. Attendance rates are horrendous. We have students who are missing literally 80 days of a 160-day school year. Wow. Thus, when they are retained in a grade, eventually, they're going to stop going because they're going to be older in that grade, meaning that, okay, well, if you have a birthday that's in the winter, like I do March, you would be 19 if you did not graduate. If you basically failed one grade, you would be 19 when you finish, if mm-hmm. you stay in. If you have a summer birthday, you would be 18, so that wouldn't be too far off the mark, so nobody would really notice. But as children get older in a grade, they are not going to be socially promoted, thus they're going to drop out, thus they're going to have more crime rates. So all of those things really work together and people don't notice it. The reason I say that is because, yes, we have laws on the books, but no one is enforcing them. Because when you enforce them, there become other issues at hand. But yes, we have laws on the books that say that if a child misses up to 18 days, or if they, you know, if they are suspended from school for a certain amount, you know, a certain number of times, and you know, what can you do after that? That is all law and all policy. But no one is really following it because no one is adhering to those policies to reinforce or to enforce the laws. So that's a big issue right now. Other issues are just quality education, money being spent on the students. Chesterfield County is almost up to $1 billion for expenditures, which they will be going into the next school year. Everyone knows that it is cheaper to build something in the long run now than to go back and keep repairing things. And so there are a lot of things that we need to look at. Budget, like I said, unbalanced budgets, and why. Line items that say miscellaneous, what are they? Be very direct and specific in what you're doing so that everyone knows, being transparent with the community to get them to understand, why should I be invested? I tell them, your house is $300,000 and now it's gone up to $500,000. Do you think it's just luck of the draw? Mm-hmm. No, because they need those tax dollars to support all those services.
Right, right, right. Now, did you say that Chesterfield County alone, the budget is $1 billion?
Yes, I try to explain to people. I've gone around and I've talked to people. I'm like, I asked them point blank. I said, do you know how much money is being spent on certain things for the school districts? Mm-hmm. And they will throw out $1 million, $2 million, $40 million. I said, absolutely not. I said, just for instruction alone, which includes teaching, is over $636 million. That's just for instruction alone.
Wow.
Not the new construction, not, you know, renovation, not, you know, bus, no, just instruction alone. So then the upcoming school year, we will be going very close to $1 billion for a school budget.
Wow, wow. Dr. Aldrich?
I kind of wanted to go back to when you're talking about attendance and the 18 days.
Yes.
While we know that, maybe some don't know that schools are accredited by their attendance, the number of day absences. If we stuck to the 18-day rule, that would automatically retain more students.
Correct.
Thus, you can't socially promote them. And yes, the pandemic did have a large effect on that. But explain to me how you're absent from school when you're doing a virtual class. How are you absent the whole day?
Not engaging.
That's
if you're doing
question.
Virtual school, not engaging. Students not even online. Not even engaging in the work that's being done, meaning they're not present. You have students who haven't logged on, or they have someone else logging on for them, or they have a sibling that's at home as well. We have many students now, and parents that are keeping their children home because, say for instance, if you think about a child that, for a lack of a better way to say it, that may be someone who would be picked on. You know, we had the bullying. And then they had COVID. And so now they've gotten used to being at home because that's their safe haven. They don't want to return to school. But the parents have obviously returned to work if they work outside the home. And no one is really watching to see if this child is even online or not. Or they're online long enough that they're doing something. And say, for instance, when someone says, undarken your screen. Mm-hmm. And they refuse to. Well, the teacher may say, yes, you're here, or they, as long as they have their name up, it just depends on how they're monitoring what they're doing. Because everyone is not monitoring as closely as what you would think. So we have students that are not even engaging in the online platform.
So let's talk about that for a second. Bullying. Mm-hmm. We know that happens in every school division.
Yes.
So there are some students who are being taught from a virtual platform because of that.
Yes.
So what do you see as a solution? And I mean, I may have put you on the spot asking you that question, but what are some of your ideas that would help that situation?
Well, number one, I guess one of my perspectives is that working with parents, meaning bringing them in, talking with them, having groups that you talk with parents. Oftentimes, by the time a child gets to middle school and high school, parents feel like the student is more on their own, and they should not be. So you have less in parental engagement. As I talk about parental rights, I also talk about responsibilities for your particular child. And we are not allowing parents to really have that voice to say, look, this is what's working for me, or this is what's not working for me. How can I, as the school official, help you help me to help your child? So we need to have those conversations. I would like to have more parental engagement, community involvement with regard to that. Often we have specialty centers, we have other things during the week, but I would like to engage students in things on the weekends, like as far as, like say for instance, I went to the Math and Science Center on Saturdays. Just, that's just an example, but having those in the direct community, meaning that I rode a bus all the way across town. Well, that's not going to be feasible. We need to have more activities and opportunities for students to engage in the communities, which will cut down on crime, will also provide students with an outlet to be able to be social, to get them to learn, and to also understand that we need to work together. Right now, when students are working in isolation, they do not understand how to be social. They do not understand conflict resolution, and that's a lot of that.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to students not engaging even online, and Dr. Aldridge, you brought up an excellent point. As a matter of fact, I wrote it down even before you asked, and that had to do with bullying, which I absolutely hate. No child should be bullied, whether it's online or whether it's even in attending school. And we know that is a major, major issue. Let's talk about that for a little bit. Mm-hmm,
certainly.
What are some of the effective ways that, let's say you have some schools or some administrators are doing maybe a better job than others? What seems to be working as far as squashing this bullying? I'm going to call it an epidemic because it goes on all around the country. What are some things that are working, and how can we get the not only the parents but the administration more engaged? It seems like in some schools, the administration, they know it goes on, but they do not address it properly.
Well, there's a reason, because I'm just going to give an example, and I'm not going to give the school name. But say, for instance, I mean, it happens at basically any and every high school, middle school, and even now to the elementary grades. People try to overlap schools with what goes on outside of school hours, meaning that, say, for instance, if I'm a student and I have other students that I'm in class with, and we have social media, and they put something up or a photograph was taken and it's up on social media, quote, immediately. After school hours, the school has nothing to do with it, even though the schools have those two students, unless it carries over into the school setting. And that's where a lot of it is. Meaning that, okay, if Bobby is threatening me online, well, Bobby is a student there. But the parents would need to then file charges against Bobby outside of the school, because it has nothing to do with, quote, the school setting, unless Bobby is doing something, quote, to me in the school setting. So that's a lot of the issue and the problem, that the carryover is left to the schools, but the schools don't have anything to do with that portion of it unless it is a school issue or happens on school property or is a school issue.
Now, I'm going to comment on that.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with what you're saying in most school divisions.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we're not naming schools or school divisions here. However, I can tell you from personal experience that when that happens, as long as they're using the computer that is issued to them by the district, then there is something that can be done.
True enough. If they are utilizing the materials that belong to the school district, yes, you are correct.
And we call that improper use of technology.
Yes, that is correct. Mm-hmm. That is correct.
And so something can be done, and usually what we do is bring the children in, and we find the source of it.
Exactly.
And that child is either the rights are provoked, revoked, I'm sorry.
Right, and the parents can be held accountable.
And the parents are held accountable.
Yes.
And we also let them know that charges can be filed.
Exactly.
And we've actually had, I mean, you know, of course it's been in the news, where students have committed suicide from cyberbullying.
Yes.
Mm.
And so, you know, if they can't get you physically bullying at school, then...
Right,
that's the only way.
And
research shows
that
girls are affected by cyberbullying, and boys are dealing more with physical bullying.
Right, that is correct.
And so the thing is that a lot of the bullying, cyberbullying occurs, you would be surprised, in the wee hours of the night.
Oh, yes, definitely.
You know, and when children, you would assume, are asleep, they are up sending messages. And, you know, this chat, we would hope that, you know, when technology was first introduced to the students, it was supposed to be a learning experience and a way for them to, you know, not have to carry heavy books to school, for us to get rid of our old-fashioned encyclopedias, because the information was there at the fingertips.
Exactly.
But the children have decided to use it as another platform, and you know, the TikTok and
oh, definitely, you know, all of yeah, it's not used for, like, say, for instance, and, like you're saying, they're very well versed in the use of technology with regard to communication, but not instruction,
right?
Mm-hmm. Which are totally different. Mm-hmm. And so you're correct, and I thank you for bringing that point. That yes, if they're using the materials that have been issued by the school district, yes, they can be held accountable. If they are not, no. And that's been a lot of the problem, where they have not used the school's materials to do it.
Let's talk about the school districts, and let's talk about Dale in particular. We're speaking about bullying, we're talking about children getting involved and being involved. Talked about something else that is frightening to a point, and that is that even these children that are studying and or learning or attending virtually, they're not even attending.
No.
What can the school board do to address these issues and maybe implement, what can you implement to improve that situation?
Well, as far as attendance, what I have advocated for is the hiring of more truancy officers, number one. In Chesterfield, in the Dale District, well, for the district in general, we have, I think, maybe three or four truancy officers, where we have hundreds of students across the district that are not going to school regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So even if we started today, we wouldn't have enough truancy officers to even to write up the reporting to even have that in place to take them to court right now. We just don't have the personnel. We don't have the personnel across the board for, I'm saying, security officers. So security officers are totally different than resource officers, and people, I think, make a mistake of the two. There would be have to be a plan in place even for SROs to even be in the schools, because they're having a shortage of police officers in general, mm-hmm. more or less even security officers. So there is a shortage across the board, even for counselors, for anyone that, say, for instance, if a child feels as though they are being bullied and they have someone to go to, there is a shortage across the board for that personnel within the school district. And when I say district, I mean the five districts, but the school, the public school in general, Chesterfield County Schools. There is a shortage across the board, and it's not just Chesterfield, it's across the board for all schools that there's a shortage.
Now, and Dr. Aldridge, you can answer this as well, since you are directly involved. Do, in your school, for instance, is there a program in place that you bring all the schools to, all the students together in one setting, and you really address this thing about bullying, and attendance, the importance of it? And the thing about it, I remember when we were going to school, it seems like to me parents were held more accountable.
Yes.
It just seems like to me.
Yes.
Okay. Now, also, parents, they used to attend PTA meetings. And
yes, and that's an issue as well.
That's an issue as well.
But a lot of the schools don't even have operating PTAs after COVID. I mean, they don't. I've been out in the field. They don't even have operating PTOs, PTSOs. They're just not as active as they were prior to COVID.
Mm. That's interesting.
So they do not have, like I said, the same level of parental involvement even with those organizations as they did prior.
Okay.
And most of the meetings are held, quote, held virtually.
Okay. You know, I'm not a teacher. One time I wanted to be, but of recent I said, no. And you have teachers leaving the industry because they are frustrated. And they put in everything they could and just feel, hey, look, there's nothing else I can do.
Yes.
And so I leave. And so getting back, is there an assembly or something? And I'm not talking about maybe once a year or whatever it is, but is it addressed in your school, and what's working for you?
It absolutely is addressed. At the beginning of school, we have a conduct assembly for each grade level. And during that conduct assembly, we set the expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is the fact that with zero tolerance for bullying, whether it be cyber or physical.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, the fact that they sign a technology form mm-hmm. at the beginning of the school year. And so, like I said, if they misuse that, they can receive disciplinary actions for it. We also feel the need when there's any break in school, that we need to have another reset assembly, and that's what we call it. Mm-hmm. And so when we leave for the winter break, when we come back, we have another reset assembly, pretty much like the first assembly, just restating the expectations. Mm-hmm. And then toward the end of the year, after spring break, if necessary, we will have another one, because things kind of get a little wild and crazy once you come back after the winter break, because, you know, they know the next thing is the end of school, everybody's looking forward to it, and, you know, the behaviors get a little challenging. The bullying sort of picks up, but it's just because children have control of their devices. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you any child, maybe a couple, who have parental control, but usually the students have all the control of their phones, and they're watching things that we weren't even allowed to watch or that weren't even available.
Right.
You know, when I was in school.
Yes.
And so I think that it's good to have choice, but it appears that the children have too many choices.
Let me ask this. Now, I know, let's say, for instance, and it did bring this up, getting back to this bullying situation, and let's say they're off campus, it's after hours, they're not using the school's equipment, okay? Mm-hmm. However, you still have those two students at that particular school. Mm-hmm. And based on that bullying, some repercussions, well, not necessarily repercussions, but I think something that happens with that bullying, other children pick that up and they will start laughing and teasing or whatever when they see this child. Mm-hmm. Now, because as a result, even though the child isn't using your equipment, mm-hmm. but because those are two students and as a result of that first, the bully, mm-hmm. As a result of that, this child is being mocked, being teased, and like you said, we have too many children committing suicide besides not only physical, but cyberbullying especially. Yeah. They are being harassed and they end up, you know, harming themselves. Now, let's talk about, and I want you to jump in too, Dr. Berenger, the repercussions or because as a result of this person bullying this child, it goes on in school where they're being mocked and things like that. Mm-hmm. At that point, can't something be done?
Yes, well, now we do have a student support specialist, yes. who would get those individuals together, and they talk and they do conflict resolution. We do what we call a restorative practice. Mm-hmm. And so we have a mindfulness room, and, you know, they could go in there, try to iron out their differences, and actually get to the root of the problem. And usually what it is just hearsay or a third party who gets involved, who wants to see the children fight.
Right.
But lately we've had incidences where it will start in the community and then it just filters back to school.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But we have had parents who've been involved who've actually taken their children to the park to fight.
Yes.
I'm not going to say what those parks are.
Yes.
But we have recreational centers in the area, and they plan to go to the parks and they fight.
And then the parents are held liable, and then they end up doing time for, you know, contributing to the delinquency of a minor. But, you know, there are also curriculums that we have as well in absence education to deal with conflict resolution and relationships. Mm-hmm. And this is where a lot of this starts. I was the director of absence education for the Commonwealth of Virginia at the Virginia Department of Health. And we have curriculums that are being used that would help with a lot of this, but the schools have to opt into it. Chesterfield actually is one that was utilizing the resources at one particular time. I don't know if they're still doing it because they've changed, quote, from year to year. But those are a lot of things that, number one, that we could begin starting with in the schools that would help with understanding how you're making someone feel. A lot of the time, as they say, hurt people hurt others.
Mm-hmm.
And when the students are hurting, they will lash out, they will do all these kinds of things, and that's back to my point with the counselors, with the CROs, with the social, with the security officers, also with the truancy officers, when they see something, then they can begin that work of trying to help the student and help their family and whatever situation is going on. And that's really what I want to be able to do, to help look at all the things that are going on. We understand we have policy and law, but we need to be able to enact it so that we're getting things done. Right now, there are many things going on that we cannot address because it would not be followed through once it gets to the courts.
Isn't that something? Mm-hmm. You know, let me ask you this, because you have great teachers. I met great teachers out at Bushall, I'm sure, throughout the district and many districts around. There are great, great teachers out here, but sometimes and administrators, but they find that their hands are tied.
Yes.
For what are maybe legal retributions or legal problems that they could find themselves in.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes. And, you know, and because, again, going back to growing up, which seems like a long time ago, you know, we didn't have those disciplinary problems in school. We had Mr. Tyler, I believe it was Mr. Tyler, yeah. And you didn't want to go into his office. Now, his office was the broom closet.
Mm.
So you didn't want to go there. And I'm not advocating violence or anything like that. But Dr. Barringer, mm-hmm. Brown, I want to ask you this. Mm-hmm. With the school district, what can they do as far as holding the administrators in a particular school? Let's say you have some schools, and I think that the school is going to go along with the quality of the leaders.
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, it's basically, that is the head. I mean, all leadership comes from the top down. And when you have a leader, basically, just as I always say, you have an institutional culture or a culture at whatever school that you're at, meaning that the leadership shapes that environment.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever they're willing to do, if they're a no-nonsense, it's going to be a no-nonsense environment.
Okay.
If they are more lenient in the way that they approach things, and they are more of the type of person that will allow more things to just kind of be where, you know, let's work on this and let's work on that, or they feel as though they will not get the positive result that they're looking for, you will not have the action shown in those ways. That's why I say there are many laws already on the books, but they're not being enforced, because people already know, well, I'm going to take all this time documenting, I'm going to do all these things, but they're not going to be put into policy or practice when I take this child up for, you know, basically taking the parents to task. It's not going to be worth my while, because when I report that they haven't been coming to school, number one, you're responsible for reporting if the child is being, if you suspect child abuse. That's number one. Okay. That's a whole separate issue. If you suspect that, you must report it. You're a mandated reporter. Mm-hmm. We understand that portion of that. Okay. Once you reported that for whatever reason, and then they come out, they do their investigation. It's not overnight unless it's a serious, serious case. That's not going to be the next day they're going to do any investigation. So that's going to be time in with that. Then you're going to have to document from the point of the child is first missing days. Well, what people start doing is they miss a few days here and there. Okay, they don't miss them consecutively. Nobody's missing 80 days or 75 days or even 50 or 20 days consecutively. Mm-hmm. They're missing, okay, I'm coming for 3, I'm missing 2. Yeah. I'm coming for 10, I'm missing 5. And mm-hmm. so that's where you see this 80 days missed or 50 days missed, because they're not doing it consecutively. And so by the time you obviously have documented the tardies, you've documented the absences, people feel as though they're at a loss, because by the time they've done all of that work, they then put it forward. Then want to file a charge basically on the parents by saying it was neglect because they didn't bring them to school. It's basically they know what's going to happen, meaning nothing's going to happen. All you can do, and the power of the principal, is to retain the student at the end of the school year. For, I think, 75 cases that I was literally told about, in working and talking with principals, teachers, and so on, I mean, cases that I really have proven facts, 17 of those students were retained out of 75. Mm. The others were socially promoted, and I do know that to be true.
Mm. Wow, wow. As let's go back to the school board, then I'm going to toss it over to Dr. Arvish. Let's say you have a lazy school, but you also have a lazy school board.
Yes.
Okay. I want to know, how much power does the school board have to hold these lazy administrators accountable? How much power does...
Well, I'm going to tell you, people always have it reversed. They think that the school board adheres to what the superintendent would tell them or wants done. Truthfully, it's the other way around. The school board is responsible for the hiring, quote, and the recommendation of firing of the school superintendent. They are responsible for the budget being passed. They're responsible for transparency to the public. They have to uphold the policies and procedures that have been set in place literally from the state. So they are the gatekeeper of those policies at the district or local level. But the job of the school board is basically to make sure that the superintendent is following with everything that they're supposed to be doing, the hiring and firing, also the policies that are already on the books, making sure they're adhered to, also recommendations for principals. All personnel matters and actions come before the school board, meaning a hiring of a bus driver, the hiring of anyone who is hired within a district, the school board has seen that recommendation and approves it. Mm. So anyone that is hired in a system, the school board is aware of the hiring and the firing of all school-based personnel and all contracts for services to that particular district. So the school board has those responsibilities, and yes, they do have a responsibility when it comes to, say for instance, even site reviews and site visits of schools and making sure that the principal's actually doing what they say they're doing, even when it comes down to test data. Also, they provide monies to schools when, say for instance, when we talk about COVID. There was, quote, COVID funding that was issued to schools that had low rates prior to COVID, and like I said, COVID exacerbated it. They also received funds to help enhance. They also work with those principals to get data to even make sure that those schools got the funding that they needed to bring up those scores. So, yes, the school board is basically the gatekeeper for all of those things.
That's right. Dr. Aldridge?
Yes.
No, I mean, did you want to chime in? You have a question or a comment?
No, I was going to say that is exactly correct. However, I did find that once the money was exhausted after COVID, we were kind of back where we started.
Yes.
Yes. You know, with the resources, the lack of resources.
Yes.
For the students. And I think that one of the things that happened was maybe the funds were misused.
Exactly.
Focusing on, for example, masks and gloves and hand sanitizer, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean misused in a sense that it wasn't good, but I'm just saying that perhaps maybe it was overbought because we still had problems with children wanting to wear the mask because some just believed it was optional. And I think that it was kind of spent hastily, and I don't know, it could have possibly been that it was to be used immediately, but I see the need for it now, mm-hmm. and to try to help these students and schools bring up, you know, the scores. And I think that, so now, you know, there's a lack of funding for certain programs that we probably need to help these students because, as you know, a lot of schools went back two levels.
Mm.
Yes, you know, but we don't have money to go back and remediate 2 years ago.
Right, of course.
But they want to take that money and bring them forward. But, you know, a lot of remediation has to be done.
Yes.
Because a lot of students, like we talked about earlier, either weren't on camera, they didn't have the support, or, you know, they may have been doing other things like babysitting, chores, or what have you.
Exactly.
So school wasn't really a focus. And mm-hmm. so now, you know, we're finding ourselves behind and with little time to catch up.
Yes.
So now is when we really need that chunk of money.
Absolutely, absolutely.
For those programs. I'm not saying we didn't need it for, you know, the PPCs that we had, PPEs, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But now we need it for programs and for personnel, you know, to hire teachers because we know there's a great teacher shortage nationwide. So that this is where we really need, you know, that effort and that money and resources to get in there
right.
and bring these students forward.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick music break. We'll come back, and I'd like to ask on the other side, ask Dr. Brown on the other side, rather. some ideas that she would like to implement after being elected to the school board and of that nature, and some programs she's thought about, some things that need to be changed, but some things that you might want to add to make it better for our students. Be right back after this, folks. This is Studio W, The Buzz. Hey, having a fabulous interview with Dr. Charletta Barringer Brown, running for the Dale School Board District. I hope I said that right.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, you
did. Be right back.
All right.
Got me going for come on, say forbidden fruit. Get out of my dreams. You know I can't control the feeling. This chemistry has got me going crazy. I can't play this game with you because I know I lose. Not strong enough to fight the truth. But I'm feeling you. You know I'm feeling you, right? Forbidden fruit. Get out of my view. I belong to another and my heart is true. Forbidden fruit. Let me be. Free me from this hold you have on me. Forbidden fruit. Give me satisfaction. I'm trying to find a way to stop the attraction. Just the thought of you, it's like sweet taboo. And now you got me going crazy. Got my mind flooded with maybes.
You know what I'm saying?
I can't share my heart with you. Cause baby, you're forbidden.
Said you got me
going crazy. Got my mind flooded with maybes. I can't share my heart with you. Cause baby,
voice makes me feel alright.
Leave me alone. The conversation, it soothes my mind. The way that you look at me has got me so in tune to you.
Like a sweet taboo, and now you got me
going crazy. Got my mind flooded with maybe. I can't share my heart with you, cause baby, you're forbidden.
And you got me,
going crazy. Got my mind flooded with maybe. I can't share my heart with you, cause baby,
he said, let me tell you what's on my mind. Been talking all this time.
This feeling I feel for you
makes me wanna get close to you.
You, you,
you, baby.
And if your man was doing his job,
work,
you wouldn't be thinking about me. But I'll sadly situation, cause I know where this thing could lead. Forbidden
fruit, get out of my view.
Don't you know that you're full of
it?
Just let me be, leave me alone. Don't feed me your
forbidden
fruit. Give me satisfaction, trying to find a way to stop the attraction.
Forbidden fruit.
Like sweet taboo. you got me going crazy. Got my mind crazy. Crazy. I can't share my heart with you. Cause baby,
that's Nick West.
I mean,
Forbidden Fruit.
Just got that man that just make you wanna. Woo! Come on, say it. Forbidden Fruit.
We're back. On The Buzz, Studio W, The Buzz, your global radio network. Hey guys, if you're just tuning in, we are having a very good interview with Dr. Charletta Barringer Brown. I'm William A. Brown, the host, along with my co-host, Dr. Patricia Aldridge. And we're talking about something that's vitally important to us, and that is our young people, our students. And where's the needle turning, Dr. Brown? I mean, as far as education is concerned, do you find that there is a decline now in the educational experience? Are children learning at the levels that they should be learning? Okay. And what are some of your ideas to improve? Because something I heard that is vitally important, and that is the school board has the power to really make some changes or implement programs that maybe already, that has already been on the books, and maybe some new ones that might improve the quality of our educational, of education in our districts.
Certainly. I'm going to start by saying that there are some excellent teachers, administrators, and parents that are very engaged in the education of their children. I think that we have some people that are in the profession that are absolutely wonderful and making strides every day to educate our young. But we also have a teacher shortage, and we need to bring the teacher salaries up to the national average. I was a classroom teacher. I was an administrator. I am still licensed up to the superintendent's license, like I said, with four endorsement areas. EDLD, psychology, and administration supervision, K-12. And I understand very clearly what it means to be a teacher in the classroom as well as an administrator. I understand the constraints the teachers, administrators, and parents are under. But right now, the focus is moving so far away from actual quality of instruction. We have a focus, and people have a focus on everything but quality instruction. We need to be able to retain the best and the brightest. You're not going to do that with the salaries that you are providing. Chesterfield most recently provided their teachers with an increase. It's still not to the national standard. For the level of education that's required and the certifications that you need to be able to understand your content, to be able to be an effective teacher or instructor, you're nowhere near where you need to be. Mm-hmm. People do not understand that. That is why you're attracting what you're attracting to the profession, or not attracting the best and the brightest. That is the problem. Also, as I say, with my perspective, again, we need to be able to look at safe schools. I talk to teachers every day that tell me, I'm leaving because the safety of the environment has gotten worse. There is no safety in the environment that they're working. They don't feel supported. They don't feel as though they have the engagement to even make sure that the student is going to learn what they need to, or that there's carryover once they get home, because there's no parental engagement. As I say, parental rights and with parental rights come responsibilities. We need to understand that. And so when we have persons in the classroom, we need to be able to make sure that they are fully supported at every level to do their job. We need to be able to hold parents accountable. We believe in parental rights, but holding parents accountable for the quality that they're providing once that child gets home, the carryover, so that they can reinforce the education once that child is at home. We need to be able to understand that. All those things are in play. Back to your point with what the school board can do and what my ideas are. What I would like to see done is, once again, community involvement. Dale District has a very large percentage of English language learners, parents who speak another language than their children do nowadays. Some students actually speak English and their parents speak another language, and there's no real communication even at the home, believe it or not. I know that's very odd to say, but it is true. so you don't have that carryover. I want to be able to work with various communities to help them understand the importance of helping their child while they learn as well. That's something that a lot of people don't want to really discuss. I speak with parents every day that say, well, you know, the math was getting harder and I just didn't want to do it. I also want to be able to have parental classes alongside the students, meaning that if you have a tutor for the student, you need a tutor for the parent to help them understand the quality of education that the child is getting. A lot of parents shy away from the schoolhouse because, quote, they were socially promoted, to be very honest with you. So they're embarrassed to come back and say, I don't know X, Y, and Z. Thus, they can't help their child be successful. I want to be able to take that stigma away or that shame away and say, look, we're here to help everybody. The end goal is for everyone to, quote, be better. And so I want to develop programs within the community using outreach partners to help educate the parents alongside the students, to help them understand the importance of a quality education and what that should look like. Everyone talks about programs. I've worked at the local, state, and federal level developing and also monitoring and evaluating programs. I know what a educational program is supposed to look like. Many people call things a program. It's not a program. It's just kids are just there. And it's of no academic benefit. We need to be able to look at what we're really providing to our students to help them and to help the community and to help the parents be better. Also with regard back to teachers, helping them to feel supported in the classroom, providing them with opportunities to enrich and better their own career advancement. You hand someone $500 like it's 15, 16, 20 years ago, and the class costs $1,200. And you say, oh, I just gave you a raise. And the raise is not even equivalent to what you want them to go back and get the education to do to be successful in the classroom or even to finish that degree so that they can be fully certified. Because once again, fully certified teachers are also tied to test scores and also pass rates for students. So that's why I truly believe in having fully certified or certified teachers in the classroom. Provisional license is not certified. You need to be able to work towards being certified, understanding your content so that your students can pass in those particular content areas, which are very difficult right now with history, math, and sciences. So those are the things that I would look forward to doing, helping to increase teacher pay, helping to increase or giving or incentivize and going back to school and being able to become a certified teacher, also even career advancement opportunities, also looking at parental engagement, safe schools, and also working with community partners as well.
You know, before I toss this over back over to Dr. Orris, got a question to ask you because it sounds like to me, as with the last time we sat down for this interview, that the school board has a lot of power. Really does have a lot of power.
They do. If it's utilized properly, they can be very effective in also promoting what already exists. I think a lot of people think that the school board can come in strong arm and do. It's not an entity by itself. It is a school board that works directly with the board of supervisors and others in a district to make sure that they have the resources that they need. They are not a separate entity where they just make decisions, solely apart from, quote, the district.
You know, I was just heartened the last time you were here because it sounds like to me that just like we want quality teachers, we need quality people on the school board. And I was disheartened because of this, Dr. Orris. It just sounds like if I'm popular enough and I get enough votes, I can get in. And that doesn't mean that I have to have necessarily have a background anywhere near education or even be qualified to address the issues that we're talking about.
No. Some people's claim to fame has been they've just been loud. I mean, literally, they've just been loud. And it's nothing behind it. And I tell people there's nothing wrong with being a parent. But just being loud and that's your claim to fame does not help with policy, does not help with transparency. Right. You're not going to strong arm someone because you're only one vote. You need to be able to work with everyone.
Right.
You need to be able to be a networker. You need to be able not just to say, well, I'm good with this group or I'm good with this other group. You need to be able to understand how to talk to everyone that's going to be at that table. Mm-hmm. As I talked about Shirley Chisholm last time, I'm just going to say it again. She was one that said, if you won't give me a seat at the table, then I'll bring a folding chair. I don't care if I have a seat. I don't care if I have a seat. I'll stand next to the table. I'll just be in the room.
I heard that. Yes. I heard that. Dr. Aldridge.
Yeah, and I think the last time we were on the show, I did also said, do your homework.
Yeah. You know,
do the research. It's easy to do. First of all, when you look at, I mean, it's just like our major elections. Some folk go to the polls, they don't know who to vote for. Mm-hmm. You know, they may have seen the name on a billboard or,
right.
Or they'll ask someone. Well, of course, if you have folk out there who are working on that campaign, they're going to say, vote for my candidate. They're the best. But I bet you no one ever challenges them and say, why should I vote for your candidate?
Right. What's the candidate's background?
Yeah, what's the background? Why should
that I? That sounds kind of simple, doesn't it?
It does, very simple. Mm-hmm. But they don't, and they just hand you this literature, smile at you, and if they have a nice smile, and then you might say, okay, I'll go vote for this person. Don't have a clue. Mm. Haven't done any prior work to go into the polls, just show up, because usually what happens is there's a major candidate on the platform, and most of us are familiar with that one,
mm-hmm.
or maybe two. But then when it comes to things like your school board leaders, then it's like, oh, I've never heard of this person. It's funny because I was talking to my niece a couple of weeks ago, and she said, I invited her, and I know Dr. Behringer Brown doesn't mind me sharing this, we had a meet and greet at the park in Chesterfield, right across from the airport. What is it, Daniels Park?
Yeah, Daniel Park.
Mm-hmm. Daniel Park. Yes. We had a meet and greet. And I invited some of my family members to come.
Okay.
And they actually live in the Dale District. And so then one of my nieces called and said, I'm sorry, I missed the event. When is she having another one? She says, because I didn't know anybody black was running for school board.
Wow.
And I said, wow. So have you looked at your slate of candidates? Have you been paying attention, or were you waiting until November to vote? And that's what happens a lot of times. People will wait until November. But what I like that's about awesome. Dr. Behringer Brown is she's out there now, and she's saying, listen, this is who I am. You have a chance to check me out.
Right.
You know, she laid out her whole vita for you, and all you have to do is look at it. And you can Google her.
Absolutely.
Right? And so you have time to do your homework. And everywhere I've gone with her, people were really impressed. Because she's a little lady, but she's a power pack.
It sounds like it. It definitely sounds like it. I'm not joking about that either. Well, she speaks with conviction.
Exactly.
And I met her. This is my second time. It's been my pleasure. But I also read her resume before she appeared the first time. And I was extremely impressed. And again, I was shocked that most of the people that she'll be working I'm not going to say most because I don't know who she'll be working alongside. But a lot of these people don't have the credentials she has. And not only that, they don't have the background, the education, the experience, or anything like that. And I think, and you look at how powerful a school board is and can be, seemed like to me you would at least want someone that have an educational background, someone who understands education, maybe psychology, or whatever it takes, but something that is going to lead toward a healthier district. Because if you have a bunch of clowns on the school board,
that's what you have. I mean, that not curly. Like, let me backtrack because I know a few people.
I don't want to get you in trouble.
I know people. Oh, there's no more now. But let me backtrack. But no, let me backstep. Let's say circle back on that. But no,
put that one on. Put that on me, okay? I say clown.
Yes.
Okay, folks. But I'm not running. All right.
But I'm going to tell you where that comes from. When I looked, and I kept saying, well, you know, I would tell people, I am qualified. I am overly qualified for this.
Right?
And then I looked at the qualifications. I guess I am. All you need to be is 18 and live in the district and not have a criminal background. I guess I am qualified.
It?
Yes. And because you think about, you have 18-year-old mayors. If they're running for mayor, you can be an 18-year-old mayor. If that's the stipulation, that doesn't mean that, quote, you're qualified.
Right.
Means you met the criteria.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean qualifications. So when I say that I am qualified, I try to always stress to people that I have truly worked in every educational setting.
See.
Some people will put that out there, and you can look me up online. I've done research because I was tasked to do research in every place that I work. Thus, I have research on correctional facilities in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I've earned grants when I was working for those, working at the facility. Even coming back years later, working at the central office, for the Department of Correctional Education. Like I said again, I've worked for Department of Correctional Education. I've worked for alternative education, public, 2-year and 4-year institutions, won awards in every setting. I am endorsed with a doctoral degree. You can look my name up under the Virginia Department of Education. I am truly licensed and have been licensed the full career of my, you know, of being in education. But when I tell people, you have someone in me who is from a lifelong resident of Chesterfield County, who is a product of the Chesterfield County Public Schools, in addition to that, I taught in the Dale District. Mm-hmm. You're not going to find anyone else who is as qualified and really cares about that community like I do. And there are other people out there, and like I said again, they're out there for whatever purpose. But my purpose is truly, over the 30 years that I have been in education, someone even questioned, they said, 30 years? And I said, well, yes, I began very young, but seriously, I did. I really did. I did begin very young.
I believe
young.
That.
I was very young. But,
I was going to say, you better look 30.
I know, right? I mean, you know, sweet 21. But no, I really, really have been in education for 30 years, literally this year. Wow. And I tell people, of those years, I have truly been in education, worked in every facet, really care about the students, have won awards, not just because I'm cute, but I've won because I put the work in. I put the work in. And I truly believe in educating all students to the best of our ability, making sure that they have an opportunity to go on to be productive citizens. And I mean that for every student. And I've worked at schools where I've had 52 nations represented. And I mean every student, I want you to do well. I want you to be a shining example, wow, of what our schools can do in Chesterfield County. That's why I'm out here running for Dale District School Board, because I want every child to have a great opportunity with a quality education to be a productive citizen.
Now, I got one more question. We only have a couple of minutes left. Oh, my God. Let me make my question quick, and then I'm going to give Dr. Orris the last question, and then back to you, because I want our listener audience to know where to find you, how and when to vote, when the election will take place, obviously, your website or your email address or contact information or anything that you like. Who has the power to change the qualifications to run for school board?
The state.
And how would we go about doing that?
Well, you would have to make provision for that at the state level, and then it comes down to the local level.
Okay.
It starts at the local level with your legislators, then those changes are made.
Okay.
Because it wasn't, and up until 1992, we didn't even have elected boards, meaning that you could pick somebody. I could pick somebody. I mean, you know, from the school, if you worked at the school district and you were the superintendent or whoever,
yes,
you could pick whoever. And that was the argument, that people were getting picked because they did not have a background. It was just Joe Bob's friend or Ricky Ann's
right.
friend. And so that now, since 1992, and in fact, Virginia was one of the last states to do that.
Wow.
They were still choosing people, yes.
Dr. Aldridge?
I just want to say, you asked that question off the cuff, and you see how she was able to answer it.
Oh.
The girl knows her politics.
Look.
She knows her policies and procedures, I'm telling you.
I was impressed the first time. I'm impressed this time. So I just want to know, when you're coming back.
That's what I was going to ask. And what I want to know is, I'd like to have you back on the show, and the next time you come, I'd like for you to talk about parental rights and what that looks
certainly.
Like.
I would love to.
What that looks like.
Yes, let's do that.
Yes, I would love to.
A little bit about parental rights, because I think if we talk about parental rights, I think that might help us to help the parents, help the students in
yes.
school.
Yes. And like I said, a lot of parents have come to me and they've wanted to be a part of the process. They just don't know how. And some really feel like they've been, quote, locked out of their child's education. And we want to be able to welcome them back with open
right.
arms to help mm-hmm. us help them.
Wow. Dr. Barringer Brown, how do we get in contact with you? What information would you like to provide to our audience And let's talk about the vote on November 6th a little bit.
November 7th.
It's 7th?
Yes, November 7th.
Okay.
My website is BerengerBrown4SchoolBoard.com. Berenger Brown has no hyphen in the website. Berenger is B as in Bob, A-R-R-I-N-G-E-R, Brown, the word for, F-O-R, schoolboard.com. Berenger Brown for schoolboard.com. My email address is also listed there as well. That is BerengerBrown4SchoolBoard@gmail.com.
Outstanding, outstanding. What, promise to come back soon?
Will do. You let me know.
Okay. Well,
when is your next meet and greet?
July. You know, that is coming up. I really have not set a date, and I want to figure out where we're going to do it. So I would say the month of July, we're going to have something.
Let me know about it.
Of course.
I'm not behind this microphone, I'll be there.
Oh, please. Yes.
I would love to be there. I would love to. And I'm going to talk about you.
Hamburger and,
and
find out from the woman what she's all about.
Yeah, please.
I'm here. I'm an open book. Yes. Like I said, if you want to go online and just type my name in, Charlotta Berenger Brown, with a hyphen, you will see that I am truly a woman of my word. I have been in education for these years and what I've done.
Well, you get my vote.
Thank you, sir.
No question about it. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this has been another excellent, excellent episode. You've heard the lady. Get out and vote and tell your friends about it. If you're in a DL school district, if you're not in a school district, you might know someone that is.
Exactly.
Hey, send them out to the polls, folks. That's what we need to do. We need to vote and vote more forcefully. And not vote for anyone, but vote for somebody that's really going to make a difference. And I believe this lady will do that for us. Okay? All right, folks. Thanks a lot. You've been listening to Studio W, The Buzz. My time is up, and we've got to get to our next show. But I want to thank Dr. Always. Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. Dr. Berenger Brown.
Thank you.
Oh, it's been great.
Thank you very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, hey, stay tuned. There's more of The Buzz coming. Okay, this has been Cultural Excellence in Education. All right.
They say I'm crazy. The way you got me open, baby.